Hey, Don, have you ever wondered, you've been running all these years, you feel like you're in pretty good shape. Why do you pay the same amount for life insurance than someone else does?
Well, I guess.
Some guy that's sitting on the couch eating Cheetos. Why should you have to pay the same amount as someone that is sedentary?
It doesn't seem fair to me.
You know, there's a company out there, Health IQ. I don't know if you've noticed. I've come across it on Facebook. They have Facebook page ads. And I started looking into it, and there's a guy that started running when he was 37, and he had that same thought. He's going, you know, I'm putting in this work. There should be a financial benefit because I'm trying to keep my body healthy. And so he started looking around and saying, can I get better health insurance or life insurance because I'm in shape? And there was nothing out there. And so he started a company that basically brings the insurance companies in line with healthy runners to give them lower rates. And it's called Health IQ.
That's brilliant.
It is. And if you go to healthiq.com/TRN, and then you'll be connected with some insurance, life insurance companies that can give you a good rate on some good life insurance.
So if you have life insurance, you may know your own rates and you can see if you can benefit. And
right.
If you don't have life insurance, it's time to get some life insurance.
Go to healthiq.com/TRN.
Harry's Razors.com.
You know, I'm going to blow your mind today, Freeman.
I'm ready.
Harry's has come up with another cool benefit for Trail Runner Nation.
Again?
They have. We used to have a discount code where they could go on and get $5 off anything on the site.
This is five bucks off. All new to me, Scott.
Yep, this is new. I in fact, you're looking at me like, what are you talking
about? I'm ready to learn.
Okay, here it is. If you go to harrys.com, there is a thing called a free trial set. Free,
what?
Freeman. You get a razor handle, the Truman razor, with a blade. You get some foaming shave gel and the travel blade cover.
Yeah.
You get that for free if you pay $3 shipping. So you get $3, you get a razor, a blade, and the foaming shaving gel.
For $3, and that includes shipping right to your door. Now, that's a great deal.
Now,
is this limited time?
Now, that is for anybody. Just anybody can go on to harrys.com and get that. If you're a Trail Runner Nation listener and you put in the code TRN when you check out,
yeah,
you get even a special bonus. You get the bottle of the post-shave balm,
which is the best part of Harry's.
I love the best part of my morning.
What are you talking about?
The post-shave balm. So if you go to harrys.com, click on the thing that says start your free trial set. You'll get the Truman razor, you get a blade, you'll get the foaming gel. And you, when you check out, type in the code TRN, and you'll also get some post-shaving balm.
Nice. So if it's for yourself or for a friend or for someone that you just care about, do it.
Ladies and gentlemen of the worldwide ultra-running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
This might be one of the most interesting podcasts ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing. There's a bunch of like old brothel hookers like buried out here.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's
I do own my own bar. Every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I am Don Freeman. And today joining us is Jason Fitzgerald. And Jason is a 2:39 marathoner, just out of the gate. We're going to start with a stat. And he's also a USATF certified coach and the author of the number one best-selling running book on Amazon, Running for Health and Happiness. Jason Fitzgerald, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so good to be here.
So if you are a running and you saw this, if you're browsing Amazon or if you're in a bookstore and you saw Running for Health and Happiness, wouldn't you buy that, Don?
Well, absolutely. And you know, we start running for several different reasons. Sometimes it's for health, sometimes it's for happiness, and a blend of both. But what Jason gets into is how to bring it to all of us. There's a lot of obstacles in the way of health and happiness as you go from couch getting out there and buying your second pair of shoes. So, Jason, we're looking forward to learning some of the things that you have come across as a coach, as an athlete yourself, and what's inspired you to write this book?
Well, you know, since I started strength running back in 2010, I've been fortunate enough to talk to a lot of runners. You know, I get about 200,000 readers per month. And over that time, I've really found that a lot of beginners are encountering the same problems over and over again. So I wanted to put together a resource that tackles those problems and gives these beginner runners a roadmap that they can follow to starting running and then, of course, continuing with running over their lifetime and hopefully over the rest of their lives. Because, you know, I think running is one of the best things that you can do for yourself, you know, for not just your health, but your mental health. And it's such a great avenue for personal growth. And I wanted to share that with people. And so the book really talks about, you know, how do you start running the right way? How do you really structure your running in a way that is going to promote health, that is going to allow you to see progress and continue improving? And then, of course, to do it in a way that you actually find enjoyable. So that's what I was hoping to do with the book. And it's gotten some really great feedback. So I'm really pleased with that.
You know, the first thing you think about as you feel you may be a journeyman, a veteran in the sport, we need to look back at some of the basics. And as we go through this discussion today, and as I was reading through the book, it reminded me of things that I need to think about and reassess. And so I think there's a space in this book for newbies and veterans alike.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, you know, the principles that work for elite runners, that work for really advanced runners, also work for beginners. People who have just gone for their first run yesterday are going to benefit from a lot of the same principles that apply to every single runner. And so I try to take that and distill it into actionable lessons that runners can take and implement in their training immediately and hopefully start seeing results.
You know, Don, I don't know about you, but for me, when I started running, and Jason, it sounded like you ran in high school, and so you had coaches along the way. But, you know, when I started running, I said, you know what, I want to start running. And the only qualification I had was I need to go buy a pair of shoes. So I went down to the local sporting goods store, a running store, bought a pair of shoes, and I started running. I didn't have a guide like this to get out there and kind of tutor me along the way. I don't know. How did you start running, Jason?
So when I started running, actually, I always hated running growing up. I didn't want anything to do with running. Actually, during middle school, during track and field week, I was the 110-pound kid throwing the shot put because you couldn't catch me dead running at all. And so when I went into high school, I really wanted to do a fall sport. And my parents suggested cross country. And I thought it was like track where, oh, I can maybe high jump. And, you know, high jump to me was just something fun that I would try doing. And so I showed up to practice and then I very quickly realized that there were no field events whatsoever and that all we did was run. So I was in for a rude awakening there. But, you know, my coach was really great. The team was very fun. And that's how I got started with it. And I got very addicted very quickly to the progress and improvement that a lot of beginner runners start experiencing. So, you know, that's how I started. I got I fell in love with it so quickly that I started running cross country, indoor track, outdoor track, and then I never stopped. I ran all through high school, all through college as well, and here I am.
In your book, you cover very well about some of the conditioning or self-improvement that needs to take place as you launch into your running career, some cross training and different things with diet, et cetera. And so let's talk about that and how that might apply to some veteran runners too, because there's some parallels there. So maybe if you can touch a bit on what it takes to progress to the next level, about you know, just general fitness and how it applies to running.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, I think first and foremost, I think runners need to always be thinking about what am I going to do next to continue improving? And, you know, I've seen a lot of beginners kind of stuck around the 15, 20 miles a week milestone. And, you know, that's great when you're just starting out, if you've been running for a couple months. If you want to continue improving, though, and it really doesn't matter if you just started running yesterday or 10 years ago, you need to be looking at what you can do next to continue that improvement. And a lot of that has to do with, okay, how much am I running? So we look at workload. We look at how many miles you're running per week. We look at your long run, the type of workouts that you're running, and we'll see where we can really optimize the training schedule. And I think for beginners, it's really about, okay, let's just try to gradually and very, very gradually try to get you to run more. So it's very simple, more mileage for beginners. That's almost across the board going to make beginners faster runners. And then I think the next thing that not just beginners, but really any runner should be focusing on is injury prevention. Because I'm sure anyone who's been running for a little while has probably experienced a running injury or a niggle or something along those lines that makes running not very fun. And, you know, the worst thing is when you're sitting on the sidelines, just watching your fitness just go down the drain because you have to take all this time off because of an injury. And so by building in injury prevention throughout your training in many different ways, and we can dive into that if you'd like, then I think that's one of the best long-term investments in your running that you can make, because it improves your longevity in the sport. It really improves your motivation, because if you're not injured, then you can really have more fun with your training. You can run the races that you want to. You can do long runs with friends. So there's a lot of opportunity there if runners can simply focus on injury prevention.
I think we get so excited about our newfound passion if you're all of a sudden discover running like you did, that all you want to do is run and you kind of abandon everything else. But to be a well-rounded athlete, to be a well-rounded runner, you need to strengthen some core. You need to work on other aspects that will help support that run. So diverting some of that passion into paralleled activities would be just critical, I would think.
Definitely. I think if you want to be a good runner, you first must be a good athlete. Mm-hmm. And working on strength, functional flexibility, coordination, just general athleticism. You know, these are things that you will find in really fast runners. And I think if any beginner wants to see what they can do with running, if they want to catch a glimpse of their potential, they must focus on other things in addition to running. You know, I don't think you will find any very fast runner who only runs. You know, they are including other types of exercise into their program, and it's great for prevention, but it's also great for helping you run more mileage, do more consistent, challenging workouts, and ultimately become a much faster runner.
Jason, I know that, you know, most of us runners have been injured. As you are talking to or coaching a new runner, what are the common mistakes that a new runner does that can set them up for injury, and how can they prevent that?
Oh boy, where do I begin?
So right from the start, Jason, just start at the beginning.
Start at the top of my very long list.
Right.
So I think first and foremost, you know, we kind of touched on this, but runners are only running. If they're not doing any kind of strength work, then they're not helping mediate some of the imbalances and some of the weaknesses that are inherent in distance runners. So there's definitely that, not doing any strength work, not doing any flexibility work. Then the other big mistake that I see is runners will very often do their easy runs way too fast. And, you know, if you're pushing all of your runs, if you're not really taking any recovery days, and I don't mean a day off, I mean maybe 3, 4, 5 miles at a very, very comfortable, easy pace, then you're not allowing your body to recover properly. And if you're not getting that active recovery, if instead you are just kind of hammering every run or pushing the effort and trying to get in a good workout every time you go running, then, you know, you're setting yourself up for poor recovery. And also you're setting yourself up not to perform at the level that you should be performing on your quality days. So your faster workout or your long run or even a race that's coming up. So I think those are the two biggest ones that I see, is just not doing any strength work and just running too fast on your easy days.
You know, Jason, one of the things that I love about your book, and I downloaded the Kindle version. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the actual paper version doesn't have this, but the Kindle version has links. Mm-hmm. So as you're going through the book and it talks about strength training, if you click on that link, it will hyperlink you to another resource, one being the great resource that you've developed at strengthrunning.com. But there... You know, if you're sitting here like I was, and I'm not a beginner runner. I'm not an expert runner, but I'm not a beginner runner. And I'm thinking, you know what? I do need to incorporate more strength training or cross training in my training program. If you click on that, all of a sudden the resource is there for you. And I love that about the Kindle version of the book.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I really wanted to give people an, you know, I'm all about actionable coaching advice. And, you know, it wouldn't be great advice if I simply said, you should do strength work. I wanted to give you a very step-by-step, exercise-by-exercise routine. So this is a routine that you can just do right after your run. And I think I have three or four examples in the book. And, you know, like you said, they link out to video demonstrations with descriptions of every exercise. And, you know, I have this concept of sandwiching your runs. And very simply, it's your run is just part of your workout. Your full workout is a dynamic warm-up that you do before your run. And then a, you know, 10 to 15 minute core or strength workout after your run. And the routines that you'll see in the book are very runner specific. So they work on the specific muscles and areas that are important to runners, not just for performance, but also for injury prevention. So yeah, I'm glad you liked that because I definitely wanted to include things that you can't in a normal book.
Well, you caught me there, Jason, because my pre-workout is a drive to the trailhead. My post-workout is a drive back home. So I need to get into more of that stuff.
You may need to do some isometric gluteus maximus flexing.
Only if I'm going through an intersection, the light just turned yellow. That's me. Hey, so Jason, you wrote in there, relax to run faster. Can you expand on that a bit?
Sure. So I think there's this misconception that running really fast is running very stressfully. And I think, you know, with the Rio Olympics just last month, I think if we look at any of those races, you know, besides maybe the last 100 meters, but if you look at all the distance events from the 1500 meters all the way up to the marathon, if you look at the fastest runners there, and even every runner, I would argue, you'll notice that they're running incredibly fast, but you would almost never know if you're just looking at their face. And these runners are running in a very relaxed way because they're trying to conserve energy. And when runners are carrying a lot of tension, you know, you've probably ran by a runner when you're out on an easy couple miles and it looks like they're finishing a marathon and they're just out for a leisurely couple miles themselves.
Yeah.
And it's this idea that you shouldn't be holding all this tension, that you need to relax. And when you are holding all that tension, you're distracted. You're not focusing on your performance. And by holding all that tension, you could potentially predispose yourself to coming up with some sort of injury.
You know, one of the other things that I liked is initially when someone starts running, they hopefully see some very quick changes or quick accomplishments. They see themselves getting fitter. They're going out for a 2 or 3 mile run and you know, today I was able to do it with only stopping 3 times versus 10 times or 4 times. How would you suggest or how do you coach someone to stay motivated or continue to find success and accomplishments as they get further into their running?
Great question. And I have a concept of having two types of goals to help with motivation. And so first you should have your big kind of hairy, audacious goal. And that's like qualify for the Boston Marathon. Or if you're a new runner, maybe it's 1 year from now, I'd like to run my first marathon. And that's a goal that is going to keep you motivated and really inspired to continue training. However, on a day-by-day basis, you might still not want to get out of bed in the morning, or you may want to cut your workout short. You know, I've personally experienced all of these excuses myself, and they're very real. And so to combat some of those really short-term daily obstacles that are in our way, I have this concept of just thinking about small goals, and I call them small wins. And these are things that you can build into your training to keep yourself motivated. And it's almost like, you know, in training, we talk about macro cycles and micro cycles. Macro cycle is like the entire season. And then your micro cycle might be just this 1 week. And we can do the same thing with goals. We can have small goals like I'm going to run 30 miles this week, or I'm going to finish up every run this week with a 15-minute strength session. And these are just little things that you do and you check off the box, and then you get to the end of the week and you've accomplished that little goal and you can feel proud of yourself. You feel inspired and motivated to keep moving forward. And these are the little goals that get you through week by week. And then you kind of look up from that, and then you have your big crazy goal in front of you. And that's something that you can shoot for that might be a very long-term goal. So but I think by having two, you kind of address those short-term obstacles that get in people's way.
You know, you may have touched on this and covered it completely, but this is my next question, so I'm just going to throw it out there from your book. How to run when you just don't want to. And, you know, I'm sure there's all of us that have pulled the covers up over our ear and said, no alarm clock, no run today, rest is training too. I mean, all the mantras that we've kind of created that help justify our lack of workout that day. Do you have any special tricks or ideas that you send to your clients with over 200,000 plus readers? They're reading for a reason. What do you have for us, Coach?
Yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost, I should be upfront that I'm not actually a big fan of motivation. I'm a much bigger fan of discipline. It's much more reliable over the long term.
Yeah.
So motivation is fleeting. It can just disappear. Some days you have it, some days you don't. The days that you have it, by all means, take advantage of it. If you're motivated to clean your entire house or go rock your long run, then do it. But most days you're not super motivated. And that's when the practice of discipline becomes much more reliable for you. So, you know, I think it'd be crazy if we were talking about, you know, how do you get motivated to brush your teeth in the morning? You just do it, of course.
Right.
It's just a habit that you become accustomed to doing every single day. And I think for beginner runners, and really any type of runner, you're best served if you get into the habit and routine of doing all of your exercise, you know, running and strength training and everything that goes into proper training for runners on a very consistent basis. You know, I always tell my clients that consistency is what I consider the secret sauce to successful running. And if you can just be consistent over a long period of time, then you're going to see dramatic results. And so, you know, I typically don't have to motivate my clients too much, because if you're paying a running coach, you're probably pretty self-motivated. But, you know, a really simple trick that I like to use is, okay, if you don't want to go for your 10-mile run, 5-mile run, I just want you to run for 10 minutes. And at the 10-minute mark, you can then decide whether or not you don't want to run anymore. And 95% of the time, you're just going to go finish your run, because you're already out there. You're starting to feel good after 10 minutes. You've started to warm up. And I think that's a situation where you're going to be more successful than not if you just give yourself a little bit of wiggle room to just start your run. And yeah, you'll be much better off.
You know, it reminded me of a section that I was actually able to find in the book that I highlighted a couple times that applies to this. It says...
a couple times, Scott?
Well, yeah, well, I highlighted the first time.
You need a better highlighter.
Yeah, ran out of ink. It says, instead of always being goal-oriented, it's helpful to be more process-oriented, focusing on the process of training instead of a far-off race or intangible idea like getting healthy. I love that. Because a lot of times, you know, I have friends that say, you know what, I'm going to start running so I can become more healthy. And that's all they're thinking about is becoming healthy. That doesn't get you out of bed. That doesn't get you get your running shoes on every single morning. Like you were saying, it's the discipline of the habit and thinking about the process and being involved in the process rather than the end goal. I like that.
Yeah, I think the runners that you see that are having success with their training, with their racing, are definitely process oriented. They're the people who look at their training plan and they say, okay, what's on the schedule today? And how can I execute my workout today to the best of my ability? And it goes way beyond the workout too. It's, am I staying hydrated all day? Am I eating really well throughout the day? Am I getting as much restful sleep as I can at night? Am I taking a nap after my long runs? Now, I have two kids. That's kind of impossible for me these days. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just an example of looking at everything that you can do to be the best runner possible. And of course, you don't have to do every single little thing. And, you know, you can be flexible sometimes, of course, but I think process-oriented runners are looking at every little thing that they can do appropriately every single day. And so they're not really thinking about the marathon that they want to run a year from now. You know, of course they are. It's their big goal that they think about every couple of weeks. But, you know, they're really interested in what can I do today to become a better runner?
Hey, let's turn back just a little bit to the motivation and discipline discussion. How does a runner interpret lack of motivation and desire to get out there to listening to their own body that it's time for rest? How do you differentiate between these are signals that I'm overtraining, these are signals that I do need to catch up and rest a bit, or am I just a lazy slug? You know, which is it? How do you acknowledge which you know, message is being sent?
Wow, that's a great question. And it's a hard question for beginners, because if you're just starting out, if you only have 3 months or even 6 months of experience, you don't have the awareness and the tools to really be 100% aware of what's going on with your body. I mean, there's definitely something to be said about the experience that you get from running, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And at that point, you will really understand your body. You will understand the difference between a 10-second difference in pace per mile. You know, you'll know what is a little bit of soreness that you can run through versus what's the kind of soreness that you really need to slow down. And then, of course, what is an actual injury? Where do I need to slow down? Where do I need to stop completely? When do I need to take a week off? So it's definitely a hard question. It's really hard to coach people through this issue, because it's very much tied to experience. But the first thing I'll say is look around, you know, kind of take stock and inventory of how you're feeling. If you're just feeling tired, if you're just feeling like you have a little bit of soreness or fatigue, then that's something that you can probably run through. Maybe you need to run a little bit slower or cut your workout a mile or two shorter. But for the most part, you can run through those kinds of issues. Now, if you're actually in pain, that there's a great reason why you shouldn't go for your run. Like if you can't run without pain, if the pain gets worse as you run, if the pain is sharp or stabbing, those are all examples of when you should absolutely not run. But you know, if you're just in bed and you'd like to sip your coffee and turn on the morning news, then, you know, maybe that's not a great reason to skip your run.
Oh, that's great advice.
Sometimes
Scott.
I invent those pains in my knee and pains in my ankle so that I can sit in bed.
Oh, Scott, you do not. Hey, did you have something, Scott?
Yeah, I did. One of the other things in chapter two, where you're talking about building a habit and that sort of thing, is you mentioned something that I think is also very important, and that is developing a support network.
Mm.
Of explain what you meant by that and way and places that people can find that support network.
Yeah, this is, I think, is one of the most important topics, especially for beginners who are kind of, you know, they're lost at sea and they're looking for an anchor. And your support network is the people who are there to hold you accountable, to make sure that you stay disciplined and motivated and stick to your training. And so this can be people that you go running with. This can be friends. This could be an actual team that you join. Maybe it's a local running club. There's, of course, a lot of virtual groups that you can find online. There's, you know, there's the site Daily Mile, which is a great social support network. And you can find these groups everywhere. And, you know, I went even as far as calling 2016 the year of the team on strength running, because I'm a big proponent of finding people who are ready to support you, people who are not going to question why you're running. And the people who are going to help make accomplish your goals a lot easier for you. And so you can find a team almost anywhere. You know, I don't think we should necessarily be calling it a team. It's more the people who are going to ask you, how did your run go? Oh, you're training for that race. Have you been able to train really well for that? Or what? How, you know, how is that working for you? And these are the people that are going to keep you accountable.
Now you said team, and I was doing some research and reading on your website. You have quite a team. I don't know if you have sent everyone a jersey and a number, but it says 74,000 team members.
Right. So that's everyone who is subscribed to Strength Running. And we have, it actually might be more than that now. I think it's around 77,000. And so these are all the, I call these my strength runners. These are the people that, you know, follow the blog, get coaching updates via email, and, you know, hopefully are kind of rallying around these messages of, you know, be a good athlete before you're a good runner, focus on consistency and small progress over time. And, you know, I'm a big believer in putting in the work. There are no shortcuts. There's no magic workouts that are going to make you a great runner. It's just putting in the work. And the strength running team are the people who are subscribed to this kind of training philosophy and who are willing to put in the work.
And they can get that at what, strengthrunning.com. They can join up and get some of your resources there.
Yeah, I actually have a free email running course that people can get if they just sign up at strengthrunning.com.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to say, the thing that has always impressed me when I first started running is that support network is vast and, more importantly, very willing to help. I don't think I've ever seen anyone in the community of runners that is not willing to answer a question or to take you on a run or to offer advice. I think that you just need to be bold enough to get out there and find those people and ask. And you'd be surprised how many people are out there that are willing to help you.
Definitely. They're runners, I think people will find, are a very friendly group. You know, we love the sport of running and we'd love it if more people ran with us. So I think if anyone wants to go join their local running club or just a group that meets for a run once a week, you're not going to show up and they're going to kick you out. They're very welcoming and you know, they're very supportive of any type of running goal that you might have, even if it's just, you know, I'm looking to lose 5 or 10 pounds.
One place that I've run into a number of runners that happen to run my same pace are at races. and so as you're going through this race and you're around them, I've met a lot of good running friends just on these different events, especially the local ones.
Spending a few miles with them at the same pace.
Right. Hey, now here, Jason, you know, here's something that is important for new runners to hear, and veteran runners, we still need to hear it over and over again that it's okay to take some time off. You won't lose all of your fitness. People are just paranoid with taking a few days off that they're going to lose all of their fitness level. And my goodness, we're probably all guilty of it, but we need to remind each other it's not going to happen. Let's hear it from you, what your thoughts are on that.
Oh yeah. Taking time off, I think, is just the other side of the training coin. And it's absolutely essential. You know, when I was training in college, you know, cross country and track, our coaches were, you know, people on the team were running 80 to 100 miles a week, and then the season was over and we had a mandatory week off. And if our coach saw us running, he would be quite upset. And I think the lesson here is time off is really important, not just physically, but also mentally. You know, mm-hmm. if you're going to put in some hard work, you're asking a lot of your body, you're going to be sore, you might be flirting with injuries at a certain point in your training. And of course, racing is really, really difficult. And at the same time, it's very difficult mentally to be on so much for your training. If you're pushing the envelope with mileage, if you're pushing the envelope with workouts, or even if you're just a beginner runner and you're not used to running 3 or 4 days a week and you just have been for 4 or 5 months, you deserve some time off. Take a week off. Indulge yourself with some extra time on the couch. You know, I like to joke with my athletes, you know, their workout for a week off is to sit on the couch and eat Cheetos. And I'm being a little facetious there, but, you know, I really want to hammer home the importance of rest and recovery, because if you're not resting and recovery appropriately, then you're not going to be able to train appropriately.
You know, and I think that's really important. And I think that that's where some of the big leaps in fitness come, is when you allow your body to recover, and that's when it becomes stronger. But I want to go back. You mentioned it's the opposite side of the coin. And I think that this is, and again, as I read the book, I'm looking for things, how these can apply to me. There's a few of them. One is I need to do more strength training and cross training. The other one is consistency. You say consistency is the secret sauce of good training that allows average runners to accomplish superhuman personal bests. Mm. It's all about the consistency, isn't it, Coach?
Yeah, like I said, I think it's the secret sauce. If you can consistently train, if you can consistently put in the work, then you're going to really surprise yourself. I think we overestimate what we can do in a few days or a week or even a month, but we really underestimate what we can accomplish in 1 to 2 years. And, you know, just talking about consistency and how important it is, in college, we were not allowed to run cross country if we did not also run track, because running is not just a sport that you do for a season. It's really a year-long lifestyle. And if you don't run year-round and you only run for a season or 6 months out of the year, then you are just going to be nowhere near your potential when it comes to how fast you can race. So I can't agree more about consistency. I think it's probably the most important high-level concept that beginners should take to heart.
When we speak about consistency, it doesn't, I think we need to recognize injury early, or a niggle, as you said earlier, something that's starting to complain. The only way to be consistent is catch that early, because if you just push through it, it's going to be a sideliner for you and you're going to be off for several weeks. So I think just learning to listen to your body and recognizing that 2 days off or 3 days off is a lot better than 2 to 3 weeks or even 2 to 3 months, because that can happen too.
Definitely. I can't agree more with that too. I think you need to have a lot of self-confidence as a runner to take a day off or a few days off if you have something that is hurting a little bit more than it should. And once you develop that self-confidence, you know that you don't really lose any fitness in 2 or 3 or even 4 or 5 days. You know, it takes about a week to start losing any kind of aerobic fitness. And a couple days off is probably much better for you in the long run, no pun intended, if you can just get back on your training consistently after that time off.
So we've all heard about the 10% rule, increasing your mileage by 10%. You have some views on that 10% rule, depending on where you are in your, whether you're a beginner, intermediate, or an advanced runner. Can you help us understand what that 10% rule is and whether you subscribe to it?
Yeah, definitely. So you're right. I do have some strong views on the 10% rule. And the 10% rule says very simply that you should not add more than 10% per week to your total running mileage. So if you're running 20 miles a week, then you would run 22 miles per week. And then you would run 24.2 miles per week. So you go up 10% every week. I think the 10% rule is a fine general rule, but it has some really strong limitations. So if you are a runner who's used to running, say, roughly 30 miles per week, and you take a week off after your after a season of racing, like you should, then I don't think you need to start off at, you know, let's say 10 or 15 miles per week and then build 10% from there. So this 30 miles a week range, this is what I would call this particular runner's baseline mileage. And their baseline mileage is the mileage that they're just comfortable at. And you can be really aggressive with how you build your mileage up until your baseline. But then after your baseline, if you're shooting for a mileage personal best, if you're in uncharted mileage territory, then you need to be a lot more cautious than 10%. So you can go 15 miles a week, 20, 25, 30, which is much more aggressive than 10% more per week. And then after 30, maybe you only increase by 5% every 2 weeks. And this is a way that you're really making sure you're limiting your risk of injury. And you're also maximizing the time that you're running more mileage too, because you don't need to be so cautious at the 20 mile a week range, but you should be more cautious when you're in the 35, 40 mile per week range. And of course, this is going to be different for every runner. You know, someone who's running ultras might be really comfortable at 70 miles a week. A beginner runner might only be comfortable at 10 miles per week. So I think every runner should, you know, look back at your training logs or just look back at your journal and see, at what mileage level are you really comfortable at? You know, it's pretty easy. You're not really pushing yourself. And then you can be more aggressive leading up to it and less aggressive after it.
We talk about mileage as a 10% rule, but throw in there a few comments about intensity and types of training or terrain that could also apply in that 10% rule.
Oh, great, great, great observation there. Yeah, I think intensity is the other variable that you can manipulate a lot more easily in a training program. And intensity is, you know, how fast are some of your harder workouts and how much faster running are you doing? So, you know, let's say, you know, a runner is running about 25 miles per week and they're running two workouts a week that total 4 miles of fast running. And, you know, that is their intensity for the week. It's 4 miles of hard running. Maybe that's a 10K pace, 5K pace, whatever it might be. And I think the same rule applies. If you're just building up your mileage, then you could be a little bit more aggressive with, you know, how long and how hard your workouts are. You can be, you know, adding to them a little bit more. But, you know, once you get to a point where you're starting to get a little bit sore because your mileage is higher, then you need to be really conservative with the intensity of your workouts. And when it comes to intensity, this is, I would say, the number one reason why runners get hurt is that they try to run too fast too soon before they're ready for it. And I'd much rather you err on the conservative side when it comes to adding intensity or simply ratcheting up the level of that intensity in your training. And then the other things like, you know, there's vertical gain, which is really popular among ultra runners and trail runners. There's other things like, you know, if you've never run trails, you probably don't want to transition your 30 miles a week onto technical single track in the Rocky Mountains. Mm-hmm. You might be really sore after doing something like that.
Absolutely.
So there's definitely many different things that you need to think about in your training. Mileage and intensity just seem to be the two most common ones. But, you know, in terms of 10%, it's really hard to, you know, measure 10% of, you know, how much of your mileage is on trails, for example. You know, I think you could be more aggressive with adding more of your running on trails. But, you know, for mileage and intensity, I think 10% is kind of flawed, but it's a good general rule.
What about that runner that is starting from the couch eating Cheetos? Let's say they're in fairly good athletic, you know, in a good athletic place. They're not super overweight. They're not sedentary, but they haven't run. How does that 10% rule start out of the gate? I mean, 10% times zero is zero. What do you recommend for someone like that?
Yeah, so this is kind of a tough question because it really depends on their previous activity level. So, you know, if you have a 25-year-old person who's playing in a softball league, a kickball league, they strength train 2 days a week, maybe they played a sport in college or high school, they're going to be able to do some more running than someone who is literally starting from ground zero and has never done much exercise in the past. And, you know, I think for you know, the former athlete or the person who's in pretty good general shape, you know, they can start with 3 to 4 runs a week of maybe 2 to 4 or 5 miles, maybe 5 miles at the utmost limit. And that's for people who are in great shape. And then for a beginner who's really just starting from scratch, you know, maybe they only run 2 or 3 times a week. And, you know, that's anywhere from 1 to 3 miles. And they're probably going to do a run walk. You know, incorporating a 30-second to 1-minute walk break a couple times throughout that mileage. And so there's a lot of different ways to structure that depending upon the ability and fitness level of the athlete. But, you know, I would just start with 2 to 4 runs a week, a couple miles. You know, when you're just starting, you should really be focused on the process of training, like we talked about, rather than I'm going to hit 20 miles this week, or I'm going to try to run 8-minute pace on my runs. You know, you just need to go out and listen to your body, run by feel and perceived effort rather than a strict pace, and see how that affects your body. That's going to be a really important thing to consider.
You know, one thing that I noticed that you become more of a journeyman before you, and maybe you're not a journeyman based on this comment, that we start thinking about form well after we're into the sport. But these off the couch Cheeto eaters to 5Ks, I mean, that's the time to think about form. So often people come in with injuries or stop, and it's just poor form. And they just have never thought about it. They never even considered that there's a place for foot placement or cadence or standing up straight or whatever it might be, that if they catch it early, start form as soon as possible.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's crazy to think about, you know, if you were to start swimming and you got in the pool with a swim coach, what is the first thing they're going to do with you? They're going to talk about form.
Right.
Form is probably the number one thing that coaches work on with beginners in every single sport. You know, I was a basketball player before I was a runner, and we did a lot of form drills and those types of exercises before we ever scrimmaged or played a game. But I think for some reason, people who start running think that they are, that they can just go running. Running is something that anyone can do. And of course, that's true, but there is definitely a right way to do it. And so if you focus on a few of the fundamentals, like having a cadence, I say above 170 steps per minute, ideally closer to 180, but, I don't think there's a single magic number for every runner. So if you have your cadence over 170, if you have, good posture, if you're running tall, I have this cue where I like runners to pretend that there's a string coming from the top of their head and someone is kind of holding their head up almost like a puppeteer, and they're pulling you up. This is going to prevent you from slouching. It's going to make sure that you have really good tall posture. And then, of course, where your feet are landing. A lot of runners want to reach out in front of them and cover a lot of ground, but that usually leads to overstriding or some aggressive heel striking. And if you're trying to land underneath your hips, right underneath your center of mass, that is going to cut back on a lot of the form problems that are common among beginner runners.
To your point, I remember as a kid swimming on a swim team, and heck, we had to use the kickboard and do all kinds of things before I thought, coach, let us just swim. But we worked on form right out of the gate to make sure that we didn't program any bad body mechanics. It was caught and taught early so that we wouldn't have to unlearn some of those survival mechanisms.
Or get hurt.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Waste energy.
Right.
Yeah, there's definitely other benefits to having good form than just doing it right. It's preventing injury. It's making sure that you're running as economically as possible. So, if you have terrible form, that 10-minute mile is going to feel a lot harder than if you had good form. So it's definitely something that I think beginners should, focus on a couple of good cues right when you're starting to run, like, the run tall cue, having a good cadence, all those things are really great for not just preventing injuries, but boosting your speed too.
It says here, speaking of boosting speed, that we need to be running strides. What are strides?
Dang it, that was my question,
oh,
Freeman.
Go ahead and ask.
No, go ahead.
All right, what are strides, Coach?
I never heard of strides, and I actually zeroed in on that too in the book and really read the detail on that, but I'd like you to talk about it.
Jason, can you tell Scott what strides are?
Sure. I'm very bullish on strides.
Good.
And strides, I think, are a very fundamental type of, let's call them a drill. And they're something that you can run after two or three easy runs per week. And strides are essentially accelerations. So if you envision a 100-meter, the straight section of an outdoor track, and that's about how long a stride should be. And you simply started a jog, you build to roughly 95% or so of your maximum speed. So you're running really fast. I would call it a controlled sprint, but you only hold that for about 2 seconds. And then you coast to a stop. And the whole thing should take somewhere around 20 to 30 seconds, roughly. And these are a fantastic thing to do after your easy run because they work on leg turnover, they reinforce proper running form, and they help build that neuromuscular coordination between your brain and your muscles that make faster running more comfortable for you. And I think especially if someone is getting into running as an adult, when was the last time most adults ran almost as fast as they could? It almost never happens in our daily lives. And especially doesn't happen if, you're training for marathons and you're just doing the slow runs, the long runs. Like we said, you need to be a good athlete too. And athletes know how to sprint. And if you can sprint at about 95% of your maximum speed pretty comfortably, then all your other workouts are going to feel a lot easier. So there's a lot of benefits for strides. There's a lot of reasons for doing them. I think they're fundamental. I think, after maybe 2 weeks or so of some easy running, if you're just starting out, you can start with strides, but I think they're appropriate for beginners and elite runners as well.
It builds strength. It builds strength. It strengthens ligaments and tendons and all the attachments. I think it's just important part of a running routine.
And I think let's not overlook, you mentioned in the book that it helps, because of those things, it helps prevent injury. Strides help prevent injury.
Definitely. You know, when we think of running injuries, they're technically called repetitive stress injuries. And part of your training should be to address the repetitive nature of running. So how do we limit that repetitive nature of the sport that we all love so much? And part of it is changing the pace that you run throughout the week. That's why we're going to have really slow recovery runs. We're going to have more moderate, you know, base runs. You might do a faster workout once or twice per week, and then there are strides. So we're really coming at the problem from a lot of different angles here, but you're absolutely right. Strides are a way to introduce some variety into your training that will help you with injuries.
So would you recommend not doing strides after every run?
It's more of an advanced move. I wouldn't do strides after a long run. You probably are much too fatigued to be running at a really, really fast pace. And, you want to be, I don't want to say you should be fresh for strides, but you don't want to have just run 20 miles. You know, you can go run, you know, a normal base run that you might run during the week, a normal distance run, and then do strides. But you can run strides after most of your easy runs. You can run them before the fast portion of your faster workout. You can run them before races. So it's a really, really versatile type of drill that you can do almost any time. But I would maybe keep one or two days of running throughout the week where you don't do any strides.
Or when the ice cream truck drives by.
That's when the adult starts to run fast.
Yes, you stride to the ice cream truck.
So you mentioned easy runs, moderate runs, and then some strides. I think we need to give ourselves permission to run easy. I think many of us, and I've been guilty of just looking at a constant pace, the slog over and over, long miles, and really no variety. But giving ourselves that permission to just go easy, it's okay. Nobody's watching, or probably more importantly, nobody cares.
But not just permission, but I think it takes a lot of discipline to run slower.
You go back to discipline,
than what you're used to.
Definitely. And self-confidence too. It's really hard as, I have some friends who are actually a lot faster than I am. If you happen to think a 2:39 marathon is fast, I have friends in the 2:20s, and they are, it's surprising because they will start runs, 8:30 pace and just slowly ratchet it down as they get comfortable, where I know a lot of runners who run faster than 8:30 pace on their runs, and they are nowhere near in the 2:20s for a marathon. They're not in the 3:20s for a marathon. And I think, when we think to, some of the really fantastic East African runners, and I think a lot of Westerners go over there to train, and they'll find out that, these guys are running like 2:06 for the marathon, but they'll start their runs at 9:30 per mile pace. And I think if elites can start that slow, so can we. We can start a lot slower than we are and really take that lesson to heart.
Hey, Jason, I can start a lot slower than that. I'll tell you that. I'm really good at the slower paces.
I can count my time that I'm still lying in bed trying to get out as my slower pace to be on par with their slow pace. You say prevent injuries with hill sprints.
Dang, Freeman, you're taking all my thunder, man.
Is that right? Go ahead, ask it.
No,
Scott.
No, you already did.
Yeah, hill sprints are a great injury prevention tool. Think of them as similar to strides, but typically they're limited to about 8 to 10 seconds max, and they're run as hard as you can. So they are literally sprints, 100% max effort. And the key is to do them on the steepest hill that you can find. Mm-hmm. And the idea here is that you are recruiting the maximum number of muscle fibers possible. So it's essentially like doing really heavy squats or deadlifts in the gym. So it's a very runner-specific type of strengthening exercise that you can do. And of course, you're doing it while running. So it's a type of exercise that's going to really strengthen your legs, your muscles, your connective tissues. And then, of course, by recruiting all those muscle fibers, you're really working on that neuromuscular connection between your brain and muscles. And once you have some experience with hill sprints, you're going to be able to have a larger pool of muscle fibers to draw from when you are doing hard workouts, when you are running a race. And so it's a very versatile exercise that's great for speed, it's great for economy, and of course, it's great for injury prevention.
And the body adapts to the demands you put on it. So I imagine there's, even a greater availability of these, of the mitochondria or whatever that needs to happen to pull off these powerful movements.
Yeah, the you actually recover pretty quickly from hill sprints, and you really should only start with like two or three repetitions. And the first one can be a little bit slower than max intensity just to help yourself warm up. But you're right, after, you know, two or three days after your first session, you're ready to do some more. So you can start implementing them twice a week if you want to. And I think they're really, really fantastic for every type of runner.
I missed it. Did you say how long the duration of this hill sprint is? Is it the same as the stride?
Right. So when you're starting, they should be capped at 8 seconds, and then you can move up to 10 seconds after you've done maybe a month or so of consistent hill sprints.
But never more than 10 seconds.
I think for maybe very advanced or elite runners, they go up to 12 seconds. But for us mere mortals, 10 seconds is good enough.
Wow.
And the reason for that is because they're so short and the intensity is so high that they're not even anaerobic. You're not even working your anaerobic system, which is, you know, what you're doing if you're doing like quarter mile repeats on the track. What you're doing instead is you're working the lactic muscle system. And in fact, I don't even think it's a muscle system. It's just the lactic system. And this is the system that provides energy for very short max intensity bursts of speed that, you switch to anaerobic, your anaerobic system after about 10 or 12 seconds. And so that's why we cap it at that time.
As busy as all of us are, we have time to do that. I have 10 seconds in my day that I can put into some hill repeats, Freeman.
Yeah, you should.
Now, the caveat there is that you need full recovery. So you should take at least a minute and a half of walking in between each hill sprint, if not about 2 minutes.
Well, that's important.
Let's talk about how these might collide with, or you should separate the strides and the hill repeats in a week time block. What are your thoughts?
Okay. Let's just say we have a runner running 4 times a week, and they're doing their workout on Tuesday. And by workout, I mean, you know, some sort of structured, faster workout, whether that's a tempo run or repetitions on the track, anything like that. Hill sprints can be done the day before. So because they're so short and you recover from them so quickly, they could be done the day before. So you'd run, your easy run, then you would run your hill sprints right after your easy run. And in addition to all the benefits of hill sprints, another great thing that they help you do is prime your body for the workout coming the next day. And so if you've ever felt flat on a workout or you just can't get moving a little bit, it's because you might have low muscle tension or you're just feeling like that flat feeling. And so hill sprints the day before a workout can help give you a little bit more preparedness for that workout. And so if you're doing hill sprints on a Monday, your faster workout on a Tuesday, maybe you take Wednesday off and then you run Thursday. You can do an easy run with strides on Thursday. You take Friday off and you can do your long run on Saturday. So that's a very simple schedule that has a runner doing 4 days a week, a session of hill sprints, a faster workout, strides on a Thursday, and then their long run on Saturday.
I like that you also add a little caveat in the book about these hill sprints or hill repeats, where you say make sure that you're using correct form. You're not leaning into the hill. Mm. You're standing tall as you're doing these, because you can get in some bad form habits even in 10 seconds.
That's true. You can. But the good thing about hill sprints and really any kind of repetition you're doing on a hill is that the hill sort of forces you into pretty good form to begin with. So it does reinforce proper running form just by its very nature. But you can certainly have bad form on a hill sprint. So just keep it in mind. The whole posture and running tall and making sure that you're not trying to reach out with your feet are probably the best cues to remember for hill sprints.
Hey, Scott, I have another question, but you've accused me of taking your last two or three questions.
Nope, you're fine.
All right. Self-massage, learn to love it.
Definitely. And if you can get someone else to do it for you, even better.
Love that more.
Right. Self-massage is great. I think every runner has a love-hate relationship with their foam roller. Almost every runner I know has one, and it's a great tool for just help keeping your muscles supple. We've talked a lot about being a good athlete, and part of being a good athlete is making sure that you are ready to exercise every day or almost every day. And part of that is just keep making sure that you are working out any niggles, you are helping reduce some of that soreness through foam rolling, and working on any trigger points that might be giving you extra soreness, that might be compromising your running form. So it's really important. And I think a good foam roller or even a lacrosse ball or a tennis ball are all great tools that runners can use to give themselves a nice self-massage.
How often, seriously, I have a foam roller at my house and it probably has an inch of dust on it because I just don't.
That's
I
not
just,
often enough. Scott.
I just don't use it. I mean, do you use the? Do you recommend using it after every workout or once a week or
so
when I'm eating Cheetos?
Has a lot of flexibility to it. You can foam roll twice a day if you are so inclined, and I think the more you're training, the harder you're training. Probably the more often you should use your foam roller. It's just a nice preventive tool. Now, if you are used to running 30 miles a week and you're only running 7 miles a week, you probably don't need it. And mm-hmm. a lot of runners, if they have a lifestyle that supports being a runner, so in other words, if they're not spending 10 hours a day kind of hunched over a computer, then they might not need a foam roller. But on the same side, if you are sitting down for 10 hours a day, as many of us are in our sedentary lives, then, you know, you're going to want to foam roll and make sure that you're loose and functionally flexible or else, you know, your form is going to suffer. You're going to have poor movement patterns and that could predispose you to injuries.
You know, I've been experimenting with some trekking poles, and one of the things that I plan on using it for on this long race coming up is just that, some self-massage into those spots that are just going to be critical to keep loose and long during this run.
You can get some little foam and tape it around the...
No, I'm going straight carbon to skin.
carbon fiber to skin.
Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, you know, you have a chapter on racing, and I think a lot of times we... at least on this podcast, we talk about training and that sort of thing. And we don't talk enough about race strategy and race tactics. What is the most common mistake you see runners out there on race day? What do they do wrong? What can you give us a golden nugget?
A golden nugget. I think I was once told that a race cannot be won in the first 5 minutes, but it can be lost.
Ooh,
and that nugget right there
is
basically telling us you're not going to win the race by flying out of the corral like a bat out of hell. You really need to know your pace strategy. You need to know your body and run accordingly. You know, you can really set yourself up for failure, especially in longer races like the marathon, just by going out too fast. And you can go out too fast and still feel really comfortable for 10 miles. And then, you know, I'm sure a lot of marathoners will know around 15, 18, 20 miles, you know, those wheels start coming off. And, you know, we've all heard, you know, don't go out too fast in a race. You know, I think it's maybe the most valuable piece of advice you can get about racing, but it's probably the most overplayed. The other one that I'll say mm-hmm. is don't go out too slow. Believe in your training. Believe in your fitness. If you think you're ready to run a 3-hour marathon or a 4-hour marathon, then be confident about it and race aggressively. That doesn't mean go out too fast, but it means race appropriately for your fitness level.
Nice. Good stuff, Jason. Hey, final question, if you don't mind. And Scott, I'm surprised you didn't forecast me asking this question. Get more sleep. You're right. You wrote about sleep, and Scott will tell you that's probably one of my favorite topics.
It's his favorite topic is sleep.
Sleep. And how critical it is.
It is.
Absolutely. I mean, I was, my wife, God bless her soul, let me take a nap yesterday. And when I was training a lot, I would try to take a nap after every race, after every long run. And sleep is the number one recovery tool that you have at your disposal. It is not the fancy powders that you buy at the running specialty store. It is not the foam roller. It's not your compression socks. It is sleep. If you're getting 7 hours a night and you're running a lot of miles and you think all the gadgets that you have are helping you recover, then you'd be much better off and your wallet will thank you if you simply get an extra hour of sleep and treat your body the right way that way.
Oh, I like that. I think I'm going to make that my new ringtone.
That's just what the doctor ordered for Don Freeman.
Perfect. Running for Health and Happiness, The Beginner's Guide to Faster, Pain-Free Running by Jason Fitzgerald. This is not a book for beginners. It's a book for runners because there isn't a topic that we covered here that didn't apply to anybody at any level, I think.
And Jason just mentioned spending money on running. Amazon has this on Amazon right now, the Kindle version, which is the one that Don and I both downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
$3. Mm. $3. Good grief. How are you making a living on that, Jason?
Well, I live under a bridge.
Okay. I'm just saying, everyone that's listening to this podcast has $3. That's two goos. You should go out and download this book, and there is some really good reminders. There's some gold nuggets that you're going to go, how did I overlook that all these years? And I know I got some gold nuggets out of it that I'm going to start incorporating into my training plan, the hill repeats, the striders. You know, I think those are just stuff that there's no reason why I can't do those in my training.
And they're fun.
Okay. Well, I'll give you a report.
So how can we get a hold of you if we want to know more about these things? You have a Twitter handle. What do you use?
So my Twitter handle is JasonFitz1. And all my best stuff is really on the Strength Running blog. So strengthrunning.com. We have the free running course right on the homepage that runners can sign up for if they're interested. But the blog has, I think we're pushing 600 articles and videos and interviews that are published on the blog. So, there's really something for everyone.
You know, in runner style, like we talked about earlier, the culture, you are generous with your information and very giving. And you could tell by the price of that book and just all the content on your website. You're in it for people's health and happiness and promoting running. And obviously that's your passion. It comes across in our discussion today, and really enjoyed it. You know, you have a great wealth of information, and it was fun to talk to you.
Oh, thanks so much. Appreciate it. I tried to create a resource that I wish I had when I started running. Mm.
Jason, do you do personal coaching? If someone was listening to this podcast and felt there's a connection that you have the same kind of that resonates with them, is there a way that they can get in touch with you and get some personal coaching?
Yeah, I do. I do personal coaching. I also write custom training plans. So maybe you don't necessarily want the coach, but you just want a plan that's built specifically for your fitness level, your goal race, your injury background, your schedule, all of those things. I do that as well. So you can get in touch with me through the website. My email is support@strengthrunning.com. I try to email people back very quickly. And so there's really something for everyone there.
Well, we'd like to thank Travis Macy, who said, hey, you need to get on with my friend Jason Fitzgerald. He's got a lot to share, and so we appreciate Travis for that. Certainly coming from a qualified resource. You've got a good friend there.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, Travis and I went for a run last fall, and he kicked my butt.
Well, he kicks a lot of butts.
That he does.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and go out and run.
Moss.